Welcome to Now on Netflix, your guide to what you must be watching. I'm Jessica Shaw from SiriusXM. He's Henry Goldblatt, executive editor of todoom.com. We're going to be talking about Sex and the City. So obviously, Henry, which one are you?
Jessica, anytime someone asks me that question, I have to think about it because I have an answer for Will and Grace, which is very clear, which is I'm Will with Karen Rising. However, Sex and the City, I think the whole journalist thing, I'm Carrie with a smidge of Miranda and Charlotte.
I feel the same way because of the journalist thing. I'm also a Carrie. I have no moons in the House of Charlotte, but I definitely have some Miranda in me. And I'd like to think I have Samantha in me, but I probably don't. Who are we kidding?
I feel like when I was 24 or 25, I had a lot of Samantha in me. And over the years, that has just dissipated. But it's so funny when you think about these archetypes with four people in a show. As I said, my Will and Grace archetypes are very clear. Golden Girls, for example. Do you know which ones you are?
I would love to say I'm Sophia.
I feel like I'm Blanche because I don't identify with any of them in particular.
Fair. Or I'd love to be Dorothy, but I'm not.
I can't pull off a caftan to save my life.
That's where you and I differ. Let's get to some news. A lot of announcements this week. Tell me about this new series, Eric, which stars Benedict Cumberbatch.
It's going to sound super weird, so you just have to bear with me. Benedict Cumberbatch plays a puppeteer on one of the most famous and well-known children's shows. It's called Good Day Sunshine, but this series takes a dark turn because his young child is kidnapped, and this is all set in 1980s New York. I know I'm sitting here describing what seems like three different genres. I've seen an episode or two. It all comes together in a really interesting and compelling way. It's a bit of a ride. We will talk about it more when it comes out at the end of May, but in the meantime, just sit with that.
Yeah, it sounds so crazy. It almost sounds so bonkers that it has to be great. They're not playing anything safe in this show, are they?
No, and it co-stars Gabby Hoffman, who never plays it safe in anything she's in either.
From puppet shows to weddings, already obsessed with Mother of the Bride with Brooke Shields.
I'm super excited about this one, too. It's directed by Mark Waters, who directed He's All That and Mean Girls and Freaky Friday. So there's some definite rom-com and comedy chops there. And Brooke Shields stars as a mom whose daughter, played by Miranda Cosgrove, comes home and in a whirlwind says, I'm getting married and it's going to be in Thailand. And it turns out that Miranda Cosgrove's character is marrying the son of a former lover of Brooke Shields' character. There is no incest involved. I want to be very, very clear. Nobody had kids and nobody's marrying a brother, nor is there swapping of romantic partners. When I first read the logline, I thought she might be marrying Brooke Shields' character, former lover. It's not that either. It's all very PG, but comedy ensues. The former lover of Brooke Shields is played by the dreamy and delicious Benjamin Bratt of Law & Order fame and so many other shows. And I imagine their chemistry is going to be terrific.
I love Benjamin Bratt so much. I cannot wait to see that. The rest of the cast is amazing too. Rachel Harris, who I think is so funny. Wilson Cruz has my heart forever from My So-Called Life. Chad Michael Murray, Michael McDonald. There are so many people in this movie.
And you don't have to wait long to see it. It comes out May 9th. It will be here before you know it.
Netflix is a joke. The comedy festival is happening next month, but there's also Outside Joke. Henry, tell us about that.
Outside Joke is almost like the Coachella of Netflix is a joke. It's happening over two weekends, the weekend of May 3rd and the weekend of May 10th. And there's going to be a ton of stars there and comedians there doing really awesome and fun things. If you're a fan of the old Battle of the Network Stars, then maybe you're going to want to see the cast of Selling OC versus Selling Sunset compete against each other, or perhaps you'll want to see the cast of The Circle and cast members from Too Hot to Handle compete. There will be drag queens. If you're a fan of RuPaul's Drag Race, you can look out for Alyssa Edwards and Jimbo and Latrice Royale and Trixie Mattel. If you're a fan of comedy, there's going to be plenty of people, including Leslie Jones and Fred Armisen and Jim Jefferies and Jeff Ross. So it's really going to be this sort of fun free-for-all festival. So you're probably wondering how you get to see all this good stuff. It is going to be located at the Hollywood Palladium. And if you're interested in tickets, you can go to Netflixisajokefest.com/outsidejoke. The presale begins today and then regular sale begins tomorrow. So be sure to check it out. And for any coverage of this, if you can't make it to Hollywood for whatever reason, we will have plenty of coverage on todoom.com.
All 6 seasons of Sex and the City are out on April 1st. And Henry and I would like to welcome Jennifer Armstrong, who wrote the book Sex and the City and Us, How 4 Single Women Changed the Way We Think, Live, and Love. And she wrote about the essential Sex and the City episodes on todoom.com. Welcome, Jen.
Thank you for having me.
Why should we all be watching Sex and the City right now?
I'm very excited because I feel like it will remind people of the greatest part of Sex and the City. It came out on HBO late 90s, early 2000s. This was an enormous phenomenon. Everyone was talking about it. It was unlike anything we had seen before. And also, I think over time, people have forgotten it's a very good television show. It is not pink shoes, boys, sex. It is that, but it's also a very good show and has wonderful artistic, beautiful episodes.
Jennifer, you wrote a list of the most essential episodes for todoom.com. And as you were going through the entire series, why did you choose the episodes that you did?
Some of it had to do with plot lines that I felt like if you watched these episodes, you would probably understand the entire arc of the show. But it also has to do with kind of those quintessential elements and having a variety, because some of these episodes are pretty serious. Probably my favorite episode, and I think Jessica's too, is My Motherboard Myself, which is when Miranda's mom dies and her friends rally around her to support her. And then there's other ones, especially those early ones, like Valley of the 27. Something guys, where you've got these women who are in their 30s and 40s dating 20-something guys and waking up in this disgusting apartment. That's just fun and funny. And when the show was on, I was a single young woman in New York City. And I was also often looking for things that you just watched and went, oh my God, that has happened. There's a balance of total glamour and total indignity in being that person. And they really nail it a lot. And I would say, including in something like Valley of the 20-something guys.
I love that you mentioned My Motherboard Myself. It is my favorite episode, not just of Sex and the City, but one of my favorite episodes of TV of all time. And one of the things I love so much was it showed how much friends become family. And in many ways, like you said, this is a show about these four women, their dating lives and their work lives. And yes, they meet up and they have their brunch and they go out for cocktails and all those things. But it is one of those episodes that really underscores how much friends are family in this show in such a profound way. I think about the final scene of that episode and it's so moving. Miranda's mother dies and she's walking after the funeral out of the church and she's alone. And Carrie, played by Sarah Jessica Parker, of course, gets up and stands with her and stands by her. And it is such a beautiful statement of literally standing by your closest friends. And that episode I could watch a million times in a row and never get sick of it.
Totally. It's actually shocking that it's only 30 minutes when you realize everything that's in it, because they still get quintessential Sex and the City stuff, like the fact that Samantha is dating a wrestler and she does full on some of the most ridiculous, amazing physical comedy that she's ever done. They used to call her the Lucille Ball of the bedroom. And the next thing, it's this very serious thing. There's also the scene where Miranda goes to get a bra fitting and has a breakdown because the overbearing woman who's helping her reminds her of her mother. So there's just so much in this beautiful episode.
I want to talk a little bit about how this series straddled pre-9/11 New York and post-9/11 New York. Because of the way the production schedule happened, and I believe there was a real-life pregnancy involved, there was a big break in filming. And so the last pre-9/11 episode is one where Carrie says goodbye to Big as he's moving to Napa. And the first post-9/11 episode is sort of a love letter to New York in the form of Fleet Week. Tell us about that Fleet Week episode and how that came about and why they thought that this was the perfect way to sort of reimagine and re-embrace New York after 9/11.
That was a wild thing, the way that they had this episode called I Heart New York. That's her and Big and saying goodbye to Big, who's a symbol of New York. And it was a tribute. And then they had what was actually their tribute. And there was a pretty long gap. It's important to remember, even after this, we had time to process a little bit of 9/11. This wasn't immediately following. So it's actually a very fun, frivolous episode. And I think the idea behind it was to be like, we are New York City. We want to show optimistic, bright future instead of being sad. And so it is this fun, sexy guys in Navy uniforms and lots of flirting and banter. And they have this metaphor that Carrie is dating the city because she's sick of dealing with men. And she has this interaction with a guy at Fleet Week and he badmouths New York City. And she says, I can't have anybody talking crap about my boyfriend. And that's the end. So it really leaned into the big elements of Sex and the City, those more fun, frivolous ones, I think very much on purpose in this case. And I know that they basically just brainstormed, what are things that you guys love about New York City? And one of the writers said, Fleet Week is so fun. And they were like, how have we not done that? So that is how that all came together.
I love thinking about how the show started, because the first episode of the series is completely different from what the show eventually became. They break the fourth wall, and then very quickly they realized, yeah, that is not what this show is. But I'm curious, Jen, you have the fourth episode of season one on your list of essential episodes. So at what point do you feel like it became the show that it would continue to be?
The thing about that episode in particular is what became essentially an iconic conversation about anal sex, and this becomes such a signature. I call them the Socratic dialogues of Sex and the City, where they'll take a dating or sex issue and throw it at all four women, and each one has a slightly different answer because they're strong, different personalities. And this is so great too, because they actually are in the back of a cab, and Charlotte has been asked to have anal sex and she's debating it. And so Carrie gets in the cab, they're debating it, and then they're like, we have to go pick up Miranda and she's going to weigh in, and then Samantha's going to weigh in. And it's quintessential New York, quintessential Sex and the City. And I know that is the first big time that they felt they had like a water cooler conversation moment where people went, did you see this show?
Tell us about some of the guest stars that are on this show, because everyone from Justin Theroux, Jennifer Coolidge, Vince Vaughn, Carrie Fisher, so many people had little moments on Sex and the City.
You mentioned Justin Theroux. He's actually one of my favorites, not just because he's just one of my favorites of all time, but also he plays two different guys in the show. I don't think anyone's ever done that again. That was right at the tail end of people thinking they could get away with that sort of thing. And certainly Theroux could not get away with that at this date. People would recognize him. But yeah, there were tons of people sort of pre-fame. Timothy Oliphant was in Valley of the 20-something Guys. That's the guy she has sex with. He's always cute, but baby Timothy Oliphant is just so cute. Bradley Cooper shows up, and a lot of the guys of the week, essentially, which is what we called them even then. When you go back and watch it now, you're like, oh my God, I can't believe I didn't even realize that was this person who was going to become famous. So they just had room for a lot of the one-off, but still big, memorable character.
Jennifer, you literally wrote the book on Sex and the City, though. So tell us about the book and where we can find it and your research process that went into it. It is a page turner and it's as compelling as the series itself. So I'd love people to pick it up.
Thank you. It was so much fun to live in this world for a couple of years doing this book. It is comforting and glamorous and nostalgic all at once. HBO and the creators and the cast were pretty open to it. And I loved hearing the good and the bad. Kristen Davis, for instance, was really forthcoming in this very charming way. She kept going, I'm probably telling you too much, but she talked about how her feet were messed up still to this day from wearing those shoes, how she sometimes felt bad because she didn't feel like she was like skinny enough for the show. All of these things that you can imagine went on, but it also seemed three of the four women had this really close, lovely relationship. It was so much fun and it is out there. You can get hardcover, paperback. And if you want to visit me online, you can get a link there too, JenniferKArmstrong.com.
Jen, before we let you go, what do you think the legacy of the show is? Here we get to visit it again and watch it in its entirety, not on like basic cable where half the words are edited out. And it's so nice to get to see a whole episode.
I think there's a number of legacies, but maybe the strongest one is the fact that they single-handedly and very quickly didn't just destigmatize being a single woman, they actually elevated it. They made it into not just it's okay, but no, you should actually want to be single. Smug marrieds should watch this and be like, I am jealous that these people are single. And that to me is the point of all the glamour and all of the sort of overblown materialism. This is to show that these women could make their own glamorous life without a man. And have this found family to back them up in it. And to me, that is the strongest legacy.
Absolutely. All six seasons of Sex and the City out on Monday, April 1st. Jennifer Armstrong, author of Sex and the City and Us, How Four Single Women Changed the Way We Think, Live, and Love. Thank you so much for joining us. You can read Jennifer Armstrong's guide to the essential Sex and the City episodes on todoom.com. And everyone can check out Jen's stuff at jenniferkarmstrong.com. Thanks, Jen.
Thank you.
While you're waiting for Sex and the City, there are so many other shows about female friendship here on Netflix. My personal favorite, Gilmore Girls, but I also love Never Have I Ever so deeply and profoundly. One of the shows that has a special place in my heart is Orange is the New Black. Yes, they're all incarcerated. Those are specific circumstances for friendship, but I do love this show so deeply. Jenji Kohan, the creator of the show, is so brilliant. And it was funny, and it was heartfelt, and it was emotional, and it was profound, and it was groundbreaking, and it's all about women. Glow, oh my gosh, Dead to Me. Henry, what are your favorites?
Jessica, the last two you named are my favorites. Glow, I love so much, and I need to go back and rewatch it. And Dead to Me is a lovely, poignant postcard of a friendship between two women, and especially with Christina Applegate being in the news for her brave MS struggle. Going back to watch that is such a treat. And then the guilty pleasure on the list, of course, is Firefly Lane. The wig work in Firefly Lane is next level. If you just want to sit back and watch two women play with wigs for two seasons, I highly recommend.
Wigs and wine.
Wigs and wine. Jess, I'm the one person in the world who I believe has seen all 20 seasons of Grey's Anatomy. I was there back when Meredith and Christina were on the first day on the job. They pulled the LVAD wire. Callie comes, Arizona comes, Jackson comes. I've seen it all, and I wouldn't trade those memories for the world. So I highly recommend that if you want to restart a binge.
All six seasons of Sex and the City are out on April 1st, and you can read Jennifer Armstrong's guide to the essential Sex and the City episodes on todoom.com. Next week, we'll be previewing the new series, Ripley, and the film, Scoop. We'll see you next week.